Welcome to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On, board certified clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker.
Our guests today are Kai and Jackal, who are longtime friends and co-hosts of The Stealth, a transmasculine podcast where they share stories of their transmasculine brothers. We'll discuss their podcast, what it means to be stealth, and decisions about disclosure. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell us what it means to be stealth.
We named our podcast Stealth because it's a controversial word in our transmasculine community. To some folks, it means that you are ashamed and hiding, and stealth has connotations of being sneaky and things like that. And to other people, it's about living a life without having trans label as your first thing and knowing when and where to disclose. Even some people who think that they're not living a stealth life still have places in their life, pockets in their world where people don't know. You don't go to the 7-Eleven and say, "Hey, I'm trans, by the way, thanks for the M&Ms." And the biggest thing I think for the Stealth podcast, and Kai, you can jump in and give your two cents, but is really issues around disclosure. Because once you reach a certain stage when you're on testosterone, you typically blend in as just a cisgendered man, and people don't know until you tell them, until you disclose. And so you're automatically stealth. Like I always say, stealth happened to me. And then it's this moment of decision where you're deciding if you are going to disclose to a person in order to build a relationship, in order to educate, in order to get healthcare, or various situations. So that's how I would describe it.
And we have interviewed close to 80 people, and we asked them this question: what does stealth mean to you? And everybody has a different answer. One of the things that led us to form the podcast was our own experiences around disclosure. Some of us live low to non-disclosing lives for really important reasons. Keep our safety, psychological safety, just a decision. It's such a personal thing. And then some of us are just out everywhere we go and may even tell the 7-Eleven person, like, "I'm trans." It really depends. But we've had such a nice time getting to hear from our transcestors, the guys who transitioned before us and a little bit after us. And during the time in which we transitioned and before, we were told to live a low to non-disclosing life. We were told to go underground and create our histories and leave our support systems behind and change our professions. And if you think about mental health, that's not a great thing to do. It's not a great way to continue your life if you leave everything you care about and everybody who cares about you behind to live your authentic self. So we're really, really thrilled to be a part of it. And we both have our own experiences, Jackal and I, about how much or how little we disclose. And that's something that we encounter, I think, most days. For the folks who aren't, one of the words that has often been used is called cis passing, or who blend or her pass. That's not always a goal that people have. That's not always something people can or want to do for lots of different reasons. So it doesn't mean somebody's less or more trans or less or more trans mask or anything like that. So we really value all the different nuances that the spectrum of who we are.
I remember when I first started my medical transition back in 2005, there was a lot of controversy around this topic. Jackal, you said sometimes people refer to being stealth as you're being deceptive or dishonest. They would say, "Well, you should definitely tell people if you're going out on date." Well, what if it's just one date? If you don't know that person, how do you know you're safe with them? And it wasn't until 2011, I believe it was the year, I went out to the Philly Trans Health, which became the Philly Trans Wellness and now is completely something else. They're not even having a conference this year. But that's when I first encountered trans guys using the phrasing of low or no disclosure. It got me thinking, because this idea of disclosure is really familiar in the medical context. You know, I'm a medical social worker, and On has spent most of his career as a nurse. So this idea of disclosure, it made a lot of sense to me, especially if you're medically transitioned, because it's deciding who do I want to disclose confidential, private medical information to. I would imagine there's pushback on that, and maybe you've encountered that in some of your interviews or on your podcast or just elsewhere, to the idea of privacy, confidentiality, safety. I remember there was pushback on all of that back in 2005, 2006, 2007. I didn't personally have the knowledge or the skill to respond back. I didn't have enough history to know. I was just still learning at that stage, even though I was 40 something years old. I felt like a kid in my 40s. It sounds there's still some of that around. I don't talk to people that much about the topic, but since you do, it sounds to me there still is a certain level of controversy around it. I just don't use the term anymore. I just say low or no disclosure to try and avoid it. But I don't know if we can entirely, right?
It's funny. I love the word stealth. I guess I like to be the instigator in a way, because I just think it's a fun. Fun is kind of a weird word to say, but it's an interesting word for me. I don't have the deceptive, sneaky, ashamed of who you are association with it. What Kai said, we need to choose, we need to be safe, we need to protect ourselves. That's how I see that word. Disclosure was the word that I had issues with. And it's interesting that you come from a medical perspective, and I can totally hear and relate to, and it helps me put it in perspective more about disclosure in this privacy, medical, things like that. But what I related it to was legal stuff. It just sounded like an icky word to me, and I just never really liked it. But another thing, getting away from both of those terms, that I really liked that one of our guests presented to us was that for the gay and lesbian community, for the queer community, there's always this issue of coming out. You come out to people. And it really felt odd for us to come out of our authentic self. I'm coming out to you as a guy. Can't you see that I'm a guy? That kind of thing. And what he phrased it as is, I'm letting people in. And I love that. That to me is what I'm doing. I'm not disclosing. I'm not being stealth. I'm not doing any of those things. I'm letting you in to my world. And that's how I now look at it. And that's how I try to teach young trans guys or trans people to look at it, so that it feels a little bit more empowering, I think.
Now, I love that. It comes from a place of agency, of ownership. I remember people used to equate stealth with on the down low, which was not seen as a positive, right? Because you were in the closet, you were hiding. So I like this idea of, so yeah, gay people come out of the closet, but trans people letting people in. It makes sense when people have said, oh, did you come out? Well, as a lesbian, I did. It never made sense to me to come out.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you ever heard of the term woodworker or I'm woodworking? I remember hearing a couple of guys who had transitioned 30, 40 years ago, and they would use that kind of language. So you're shaking your heads. Yes, the listener can't see that. So you have heard this woodworking or being a woodworker. So instead of still.
No, it's the first time I've heard of it.
Yes. If somebody has mentioned it on our show. It's not something that I ever used to describing myself or my experience. Yeah.
My stealth experience is on and off all the time. It's not the occasional thing. I'm more stealth than I am the other direction.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that really prompted me to work with Jackal on this podcast and is because, as Jackal described it, sometimes what can happen with us is we can just go about our lives and then stealth can happen to us, as Jackal says. And I didn't intentionally stop disclosing. I moved out of the city in which I transitioned. I had a new job. I had a career. I had concerns about homophobia, transphobia as a professional in my career, and how that could potentially cause a lot of problems for me if somebody were to target me in some way. And so I just didn't disclose at work. And then I worked for religious organizations and I worked with kids. I'm a mental health person. And I was in schools and I was in people's homes and I was extremely cautious and very low to non-disclosing. And I've been in that career since 06. When I was literally living in the middle of nowhere, I was so isolated and removed from community and underground. It was miserable for me. And I just decided that I couldn't live that way anymore. The only people I was disclosing to were doctors, rarely. And I didn't like that either. So I just think our safety is such an important thing. And right now, in this political climate, in this world that we're living in right now, Jackal and I'm speaking for each other, we're just so committed to being out, to being present, and to being who we are and all that we are, and highlighting our guests and not going underground. Our representation matters. And we've had people ask us, are you going to take your website down? Are you going to remove your names just for your own safety? And no, absolutely not. We are here and we're getting more communication from people of all generations saying, we are so glad you're here and thank you for sticking around, because we want people to stick around.
And I want to piggyback on that too, because the other thing that we're not doing is fear mongering. We recognize we're not trying to be unrealistic about what's going on. We know that we have a crappy administration going on. It's been less than 100 days and we can already see the fallout. We understand that. And Kai and I focus on trans joy, trans hope, the interviews that we're doing. We're talking about community this season, connection. We really focus on that rather than the be afraid. There's too much of that already. We don't need more of that. And Kai and I are not only committed to keep our podcast going and keeping our presence visible, but keeping it positive and keeping the trans joy alive. That's really our deep commitment.
Well, and thank you for that. I hadn't even considered taking anything down. It didn't even dawn on me. Some of us, we need to stay available for the people that are going to go out there looking. I had an experience in 2008. I was in Scottsdale, Arizona. I had just had surgery with Dr. Toby Meltzer. And there was another guy in town that had just had surgery, and he was all alone. He was in a hotel room alone. He had traveled from across the country. And I said, hey, can I come hang out with you? And he said, sure. And what I learned from him is that he had had surgery 3 decades before with Dr. Laub at Stanford University, and then went off to live his stealth life. His wife knew that he was a trans guy, but her family didn't know. And their children that they adopted didn't know. And he was completely stealth at work everywhere. And then he injured his knee and he was laid up at home for a couple of days. And wouldn't you know it, he went on this thing called the internet. Are we talking 2008, right?
The internet.
He went on the interweb and he started looking up things. And lo and behold, there was this whole community. And there were all these surgeons because he needed some repairs or something from his previous surgery. And he connected to people for the first time in a couple decades. And I remember thinking, wow, well, that's kind of impressive. And that must have been really lonely. And I think it was that combination of he just wanted to live as a man in the world. Mm-hmm. And yet he didn't have community to the degree that he might have been able to have it if there was at least one other person in his life besides his wife. Yeah. So it was inspiring and sad at the same time, if that makes sense.
It's definitely of a certain era, too. The more you know about transgender health and medicine and what we were told to do or not to do, it's definitely of a certain era. I'm curious to see how it goes moving forward.
Kai alludes to it when he says it's from a specific era, but I think it's also not just what we were told to do, but literally you had to say that you were going to be stealth, or you could not get the stuff that you needed. You couldn't get the surgery approved. You couldn't get the testosterone approved. You couldn't get your medical health care approved unless you did their boxes, unless you checked their boxes.
It's interesting because we just had a panel of academics on our show. And that's what they talked about, how those expectations were just established by people who weren't trans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we had to be straight too. It was inconceivable that you'd want to date anybody who was cis male or another trans person.
Yeah.
I had a student who reached out to me who was very frustrated because of wanting to do a study involving trans identities, but they cannot mention the word at work. And now I suppose some people could look at my statement on this as, why wouldn't you stand up to it? And I feel if people's hands are tied because they're going to lose funding or they're consistently threatened and they know they may lose their job, I want to be able to help people reframe the language. It's not lying. It's not deceiving. It's just saying, okay, maybe we can come up with different words, different ways of describing this child or teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And people are lost.
I feel like we've been good at that. I spent almost 2.5 decades in lesbian community, and we came up with many different ways to have conversations where nobody knew what we were talking about. Right? We had our own language and code, and it was helpful. It was helpful to be able to do that. And I think we do, to a certain degree, I think we can have that as trans people. But then again, there are going to be people who, when they're told you can or cannot say this or that, are going to be a bit more... that's going to instigate them to be rebellious against that. Or in some cases, I think maybe what Jackal was talking about, wanting to use the word stealth just as a little like, haha, which I can appreciate, actually. I have that tendency in me as well.
I'm a poker. I can poke at you. I'd be like,
One of the things that we've really come to appreciate is the cross-generational talk, because with hindsight, because we're not young whippersnappers, we've had a little history behind us. We've lived through times where we've had concerns similar to what's happening now, and we can see beyond it. We can see that there's a future for us, and that we can grow old, and that we can experience the bond that we do that is so unique. And I think as we talk to more young people, I work with middle schoolers. Y'all got to stick around, and we're going to get through this. So I really appreciate that. We have a little bit of wisdom just because we live so long. You know, I don't think I'm smarter than anybody else, but I think we have that experience to pull on.
Definitely. And I think I probably have a little bit more. I don't know what your situation, Kai, is at work and how much you let people in or how students or things. But I too work with students, but I work with them at the college level, especially just the 18, 19, 20-year-olds that are just starting college and figuring out how to get through college. And last semester in my program that has about 400 kids in it, we had a critical mass, 15 students were trans mass, not just transgender, but trans masculine. And so I was like, wow, that's a critical mass. And let me reach out to these kids and talk about disclosure. I texted every single one of them privately. And I said, hey, I noticed that your birth name and your birth gender were different than your preferred name and preferred gender. I just wanted you to know that I'm transgender. And they were shocked. They look at me and they would like, I would never know. Exactly. I have to be able to say it to you in order for you to even know that you have an ally right here in this program that you're a part of. So we started a group this semester for specifically because of the Trump administration and all the hate that was coming at them. I asked them outside of the Queer Empowerment Club that happened, do you want to have your own club? And they said, yes. And we have about 20 students that come regularly every other week to the group.
Well, that's amazing. I was talking with somebody recently and I said, what needs to be happening more is people who are either younger or regardless of age, they're newer to a trans identity or doing a type of transition, whether medical or social, to connect with or learn from in some way, read a book, listen to a podcast, people that were transitioning 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, because they were transitioning through a time that is similar to today, although in some respects worse, because it was much more difficult to get medical care than it is nowadays. But to learn, you can still find community, you can still live your life and be successful. I remember it was probably, I think I went to Gender Odyssey, a conference that was in Seattle for about 10 years in a row. And I remember one time I was sitting at a table and it was one of the years when they first started having the teens on the family conference side. And I noticed this young teen boy looking over at us, hanging out at this table. And so I motioned over, hey, come sit with us. And he sat down and there were maybe 5 or 6 of us just looking at us with this look in his eyes. And I thought, I think he's thinking, wait a minute, are these trans guys? And so I looked at him and I said, are you wondering if we're all trans men? Yeah. And I said, we are, little brother. This is your future. This is what's possible. And he got up and walked away.
Too much. About
20 minutes later, he came back with 10 teen FTMs.
Yeah.
They had never, their parents had kept them away from trans adults.
Right.
They had never seen trans men. They had only seen trans women.
Yeah.
And so they followed us around for the whole weekend. It was wonderful.
You had little ducklings. It's okay.
It was so beautiful.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a blessing that we're not front and center in the anti-trans movement. We're not getting the same level of scrutiny.
We are going to take our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kag. And our guests this hour are two wonderful gentlemen, Kai and Jackal, who are longtime friends and co-hosts of The Stealth, a transmasculine podcast, which shares the stories of transmasculine brothers. In fact, you can check them out on Instagram at Transmasculine Podcast, as well as their website, transmasculinepodcast.com. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kag. Just in case you are fast-forwarding on this podcast and you got distracted and forgot what program you were listening to. All right, we have two wonderful gentlemen, our guests, Kai and Jackal. Let's get back to them.
I think one of the things that I love about your story is in connecting with younger people is just how it cracks me up. I think young people are amazing, and when you get to see them do the math and put it together that, oh, you're trans or you're like me or you're a little different, but we're still siblings. I think that's the sweetest thing ever. I had about 100 flags of various meanings, the trans flag, non-binary flag, intersex flag, all the flags. There's so many. I had to get a key to understand like what the hell the flags were because there's so many I memorized.
It's like the hanky code, remember?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Way more nuanced though, because some of them, yeah. So I just put them in my office. I had them in my box and I just put them out. And kids that I haven't met before were bringing their friends, like little ducks, right? And they came and those flags were gone in 2 days. And they were carrying them around, they're bringing them to their friends, and the teachers were talking to me and saying, you're the one with the flags, and they got this from Mr. Kai, and they were so excited. And I only had one instance where someone was said a disparaging remark to a student, and that's remarkable, but it's amazing. It just is so cool. And then they're looking at the flag, and they're wondering about the flag. So my office is full of unicorns and trans flags and pride flags and all the things. It's pretty cool. So I'm glad we're here and I'm glad we get to connect with older, younger folks.
Yeah, I'm glad you are there. I remember when they closed the LGBT center at UNF, which was just last year. Have you ever been there, Xander, in Jacksonville?
No, LGBT University center. Of North Florida.
Yeah.
Yes, I did go to campus when I first moved to Jacksonville in 2018-19, I went to go see their student, right, the LGBT Student Center. I don't remember the name of the person that was working there at the time. And they also had a veterans, student veterans center that I went to as well.
Yeah.
As a veteran, because I was thinking about maybe, I was looking at jobs there, I think. So I was curious about what it would be like to be on campus. It was a nice campus.
Yeah. So that was a really hard thing for them. They had all their paraphernalia, books, you name it. They had it all sitting out in the largest area, which was the open area where a lot of the students hung out. And we're going through the paraphernalia.
I was thinking about your descriptor of your office with all the flags before they started being taken away. It sounds like you had the little mini UN, you know, with all the flags.
It was.
Not in the same way, of course.
That's more pastels.
You know, I'm wondering, you had mentioned, Kai, that you have over 80 episodes now of your podcast. And I'd love to hear, are there any particular themes that you've noticed throughout the course of all of these interviews that come up the most? Things that people describe or experiences they've had or just whatever. I'm just curious about that. Any themes?
Some of the things that I'm thinking about are just that our stories are unique. And because many of us transitioned before or around the year 2000, that we had to pay for our own medical care, that some of the medical interventions, if we were choosing or able to do that, were beyond our reach at that time. Lots of folks had difficulty with employment and careers. It's almost like a little lag as we muddled through and found each other. I think the most important thing for me and the thing that I value now is that we found each other and we had to do it in real life. and we stayed connected with each other, and we built events, and we ate meals together, and we developed these long friendships and sense of brotherhood with each other. And that's been really remarkable. That's what kept me going back then in the mid 90s. And that's what keeps me going today. Since I moved back to the mainland from Hawaii, I have reconnected with all my brothers up here in the Northwest, and I am a better person for it.
And I would say for me, we ask a question at the end of our podcast to all our guests. What would you like to say to young people or to newer transitioning, because they can be in their 40s? And almost across the board, they say, we're here. We've always been here. We'll continue to be here. That message of hope. And there's also that reminder of, don't forget about us. We are here and we have been here. And if you're listening to this podcast, please remember that you aren't alone and that you're not doing this by yourself, that we are here. So that's a common theme. I think what Kai said, especially the lag in whether that be your education or your job or both, is definitely a thing. Because one of the things that I wanted to say was that I feel very lucky, and I'm going to speak for Kai too. We transitioned in Seattle, and we had a huge community in Seattle on the West Coast. And we had a bunch of siblings, brothers, Portland, whatever, San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles. We had a huge community at that point that we were not isolated. We weren't that guy that you met at the hotel. Who knows where he lived? I didn't come out in Wisconsin. I didn't come out in a really transphobic area. I came out in a community, and that was very empowering. And I think that that's something, another theme that as a podcast, especially that we have had, we've had people who have been very isolated. We've had people who've come out in community. We've had people who have promoted, pushed the agenda forward, pushed the policy for trans folk forward, medical care forward, and things like that. So there's a lot of different aspects that have happened. Yeah, Kai, I'm sorry. A
couple of things that I want to add. One is, Xander, you were so generous with your time being a guest on our show and sharing about resources for aging adults, and particularly as we age as trans people, what a concern that is and what our lives will look like. So I think that's a pretty big theme of what we encounter and what we're concerned about. One of the things that's been really phenomenal and we're so grateful for is that we've had more men of color, trans men of color, come on our show and really share their experiences and how starkly different those experiences can be. We've had men who are African-American come on who talk about what it's like to transition from being a woman to a male in this world and in the United States, where there's a whole lot of different fears about safety and whole different connection to community and ways of being in this world that Jacqueline and I didn't encounter. And that when there were guides about how to pass and how to live as a trans man, and those weren't applying to most of the men of color on our show. So we've been really fortunate to have folks come and share and talk about and have a really nice discussion about how some of those things are different for us. And we're really grateful for that.
Totally. And I think one of the things that is really apparent, and Xander, you might be able to relate to this as a person who came out of the lesbian community, is the discussion of male privilege. You just want all the privileges of being a male, which is not, for the most part, as far as the people that we've interviewed, the experience of trans men of color. You're not coming out into male privilege. You have a totally different experience if you're a Black man in the United States as a trans man.
Yeah, so folks do a really nice job of talking about those nuances. And I really appreciate those conversations are rich.
It makes me think, Jackal, about there are some differences between how men and women are treated in society in general. There's less empathy expressed towards men. And so as a lesbian, I could basically interact with people wherever I went, and you could learn about each other pretty quickly. And so people would just know. I also had a lot more hair and it's very Black. And so people would say, where are your people from? Well, my family's from Mexico. And so I went from being this Latina lesbian to 2 years after I transitioned, I became a white guy.
Wow.
Right. So that was a very interesting experience of, well, wait a minute. I was raised in a Spanish speaking family with that culture in Los Angeles. And so I stuck out in school. right? My school was made up of Irish Catholic and English Catholic and Polish, I mean, Catholic kids. And of course, I was Catholic because I was Mexican, which is not always going to be the case. But I stuck out because my skin is browner. I ate weird food and my dad talked funny, right? So I never had the experience of being a white kid as a Hispanic kid. But all of a sudden, in my transition, once I started to appear more like a male or a man in society, then I became, right? So that was an interesting shift that was probably the most difficult transition of my transition.
Imaginable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not the host and I'm not supposed to ask questions, but I'm really curious about that.
Exactly. Yeah, the shoes on the other foot, Kai, it's hard for us, huh?
Kai and Jackal, you both talked about those lags, employment, education. It's also what I experienced was the lag in a sense of being considered a grown-up or the same place as my peers. So because I had that lag in education, I didn't start college till I was 30. I had that lag in employment because I spent 10 years in the academy because I didn't want to wear professional women's clothing to work. So I stayed out of the workforce and therefore I didn't have things like a car, a home. I wasn't married. And I know I've met a lot of trans guys who were in relationships with women as part of lesbian community for 5, 10, 15 years before they transitioned. And all of a sudden now they're this guy in their relationship with this gal. And people are like, why aren't you married yet? Well, you have commitment issues. It's seen as a lag. We couldn't legally get married until now. So you're offset from your peers. What do you mean you've been together 12 years and you're not married yet? It's a strange out of sync experience.
What's interesting about relationships and heteronormativity, how almost the first question, if I do say I'm married and I'm married to a woman, the default is, do you have kids? You have kids, and why would you even think about it? Of course you're going to have kids. And that is so beyond anything that I ever imagined for myself. And I love kids. I like to live with their parents, but I just think I'm so unfamiliar with straight wedding culture. I never thought I would get married. I don't know how that works. I don't know what it's like to be a groomsman or a bridesmaid or anything in between. You know, I just don't know the circuit and it's foreign to me. Like, I never learned that stuff. All my friends were queer. We couldn't get married. So there's a lag in so many ways. I think in relationships, I didn't date till I was in college. I just didn't know who or what I was or who I wanted. That was an issue for me.
For you as well, Jackal?
Oh, no.
Yeah. No. I was a slut.
He was a big hoe. He's a big hoe. Jacko.
Yeah, man. I was a straight girl. I slept with guys. I was a lesbian. I slept with women. I transitioned and became a guy and I was out of the lesbian community. So I was still dating women. So I was a straight guy for a little bit. And then that's not for me. I actually really am attracted to men. And so now I'm a gay guy. And so, you know, whatever. You know, like,
so you are the L, the G, the B, and the T.
I am.
You just want all the flags.
Exactly. The flag is mine. My issue with dating isn't about my gender or my transness or anything like that. For me, I just get bored of the conversation, especially in the gay male community. Hi, how are you doing? You're good looking. Do you want to have sex? Just like, I'm done. Bye. Like, it's just boring to me. So it's like,
for
me,
through that phase.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like I did that. Sex I've done. If you can't have a conversation beyond that, then I'm really bored. So
I recently taught a class for someone and I think I'm going to be teaching it from now on, which I'm grateful for, but it was on senior and sexuality. And I decided I would bring in the trans piece and the gay piece and make sure that those were highlighted. There was a little bit of it, but not enough to my liking. So I added more to it. One of the things that stood out for me was watching this YouTube video of this lesbian couple who were in a nursing home and they were very in love with one another. Obviously, they must have been on the West Coast. And they said marriage, that just wasn't on their radar because you get very clever about who you are and forming these impressions for people. So they remove the radar off themselves and put it someplace else. And they said they just didn't feel that the whole marriage thing was necessary by the time they got on the other side of that. It was very interesting.
I have been fortunate enough to have pen pals throughout most of my life. And I in 06, I moved out of Seattle and I moved around a lot. I've lived a lot of places, but I had a pair of pen pals, and they were two women who were school teachers together. They fell in love in the 70s and they got together and they became roommates, and they, you know, to everyone else, but they were sweethearts and they were together for 45, 50 years. One of them passed away, but I have shared letters with them, and my remaining pen pal is a huge fan of our show. And she finds the Stealth and Low Disclosure very familiar because it really reminds her of how she had to live in a conservative rural part of the state where she was in the school system and she had to live a non-disclosing lifestyle. People were just like, yeah, we're roommates. So that she feels she missed out. I couldn't share how much I loved her. I couldn't share how important it was, you know, what a great life we had together, because they were amazing. So it's a really...
That's so sweet.
It is really sweet.
I think that'd be a wonderful book to publish, of those letters back and forth. I bet people would love to read those letters.
And, you know, I don't know if you had them in the classroom where people write cursive and they have the cursive letters lining the tops of the class when they used to teach cursive. That's how their handwriting is.
Wow.
I love
that. It's amazing.
That.
Yeah. So...
I had a pen pal. I remember when I was in my teen years, maybe 15 years old, I was living in Los Angeles, and there was a, it's still there. I don't know where it is, but it was called the One Institute.
It's like a
LGBT archives. I was probably just gay and lesbian archives at the time. And they had a pen pal program for teenagers. And so I had two pen pals, but we didn't stay in touch, probably because I got sent off to reform school and I was a little juvenile delinquent. So I lost touch with them. But I loved that pen pal program. It was such a gateway to be able to connect with people that were living all over the country. Maybe people were even outside of the United States that some of the people were writing back and forth with. And it was another example of how we can create community in a way that nobody ever knew about.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guests this hour are Kai and Jackal, who are longtime friends and co-hosts of the podcast, a transmasculine podcast, Stuff, which shares the stories of transmasculine brothers. You can check them out on social media, Instagram at Transmasculine Podcast, or their website, transmasculinepodcast.com. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guests are Kai and Jackal. Jackal is spelt, by the way, I love his name, J-A-C-K-A-L, who are longtime friends and co-hosts of their transmasculine podcast, Stealth. Let's get back to where we left off.
I'm not even exactly sure how I found out about it. Well, it might have been because, I know, when I was in middle school, one of my teachers took me over to a high school that had a program called Project 10, which predates the GSAs by a decade or more. It was started by Virginia Uribe, a teacher at Melrose High School in Los Angeles. And so that's probably where I found out about it. Because I wouldn't have found out about it in my little middle school in Redondo Beach, for sure. But I miss all that. There's something about it. I stay in a lot of email contact with people, which is similar. I miss those old school ways of staying connected. Jackal, you said something about how we're not as visible. Mm-hmm. Even if we're not stealth, doesn't mean that we're visible. Mm-hmm. And even if we, quote, remain visible, I remain visible on YouTube, but I'm not on anybody's target list for doxing and things, right? I've been able to skirt through all of that. But at the same time, as FTMs, trans mask, trans men, all the different language, we are invisible. in a different way, in that we're not really considered part of the discussion when trans things are being discussed, whether it's political or policy issues. That's part of the issue too, is if you search transgender people, there's probably not going to be a lot of us popping up.
No. When you say transgender people, put in transgender, probably 99% of it is going to be trans female, and you might get Elliot Page. And that's it, you know, because it's like you're looking at the famous people who are on the spotlight and trans women who are the target for most of this stuff. This is historical. And there's been a lot of discussion on a lot of trans mask pages that I'm on, the groups that I'm in. How do we make a stand for trans women as the invisible trans brothers? Do we go into the women's bathroom because there's these new bathroom laws? That just feels weird to me. It's not going to make the women comfortable. It's not going to make me comfortable. Is that really supporting trans women? What are we really doing? But we are so invisible that it's almost, I don't want a target on my back, but at the same time, I want to be part of the discussion. I want to be at the table. I want our issues to be at the table. When you talk about trans people in sports, and they don't care about the trans masculine person who's getting 20th place. They're concerned that the trans femme kid is like going to win all the races. And that's not even true. So it's always the trans women that are being targeted. And as I said, I don't want a target on my back, but I do want our issues to be seen and on the table.
Well, I think that's one of the, I mean, that's a perfect reason to have your podcast, because you are very focused on a very specific part of the trans community and telling the stories of a particular subset of individuals within our community. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I love listening to them. I love being on the show. I'm looking forward to hearing Han's episode if he goes on the show. Why don't you, we're about to wrap up, but I'd love for you to tell the listener where they can find your podcast, include the full name and where they can find it so they can go and listen to those 80 plus interviews and growing.
Sure. So it's transmasculinepodcast.com, transmasculinepodcast.com. And on Instagram, we're at Stealth Podcast. Just go to our website, transmasculinepodcast.com. You will see it. Our podcast airs on all the platforms. You can email us and get in touch with us from the website, and you can see photos of folks, a huge amount of photos. It's really amazing.
And if you become a member, we have a very $4 a month membership section. You can actually get some trans masculine history, because we have people who have come and gone before us that are no longer able to tell their stories. And so one of our volunteers did quite a bit of research. We have about 25 trans masculine people of history that you might not otherwise know of.
And I do want to pitch our mentor program. So we have a mentoring mentee program that's been going on for probably a couple years, right? And I think we have about 80 plus people. So over 40 pairs happening. And we, it's a great opportunity to connect across generations, whatever that means. So we have newer or questioning folks, and then we have longer transition folks. And it doesn't, you know, transition means whatever you want it to mean. Okay, it's not a test. There's no right or wrong. We're trying to keep it low barrier and just all about that really special connection that we have. So Jackal's got a couple of mentees. I have a mentee in a formal sense, and it's just been a really wonderful experience. And we have amazing volunteers that are really helping to provide the support. So thanks so much for having us today. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for getting voices out. I love your show. I've listened to some of your episodes, and it's really nice to meet you and virtually meet you. Dr. On.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for mentioning the mentor program. I was going to mention that if you didn't, because I've been a mentor now for, it's been less than a year. I have one mentee out in the Portland, Oregon area, and we're not that far off in age, maybe a decade, decade and a half. They're medically transitioned and for maybe 3 years or something. So it's been wonderful. We actually meet every 2 weeks. I love it. Yeah. That's so thank really you for good. That.
Are you coming to our quarterly meeting next week? Or this,
I don't
this
tend Sunday? To be able to make your meetings because of my work schedule, but one of these days I'm going to do it, darn it. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks for being a part of it.
I hope to be on one.
Yeah, thanks for being a part of it. That's sweet. That's really nice. So thank you both. Yeah, nice to see you.
Take care, guys.
We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. We hope that you've enjoyed this hour as much as Xander and I certainly did. And we hope that you tune in, check them out, transmasculinepodcast.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.